Welcome to The Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. My name is Emma and I'll be your host for today's episode. Today is the start of Women's Health Week. Now, we started our Women's Health Week episodes a little bit early. Our last episode was also in aid of Women's Health Week. But something a little bit different today because I'm going to be joined by a co-host. Today I'm joined by Megan from the Centre of Women's Safety and Wellbeing. Megan's the Women's Health Advocacy and Engagement Officer at Women's Safety and Wellbeing. And Megan is an avid reader. She enjoys watching football and she loves playing with her cats. So thanks for joining me to co-host today, Megan.
Thanks for having me, Emma. I'm really excited. First time co-hosting a podcast.
I'm going to be honest, it's my first time co-hosting this podcast as well. We can learn together. And so we're joined today by Kate Fielding. Kate works in media. She is a sports lover. She's played sports at state, national and international and local level. She lives in good old Bunbury and she's here to talk to us about playing local sports. So thank you for joining us today, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we get started, Megan, do you want to talk to us a little bit about why we think talking about local community sports fits with Women's Health Week?
I think that's a really great place to start, Emma. So Women's Health Week is a really exciting week for me and us at the centre and all of us in the women's health sector because it gives us an opportunity to really talk about women's health, which is what we do all the time, but to an even bigger audience. And one of the really important parts of health is physical health. And a big part of that is movement and activity, which I think is where people's minds automatically go when we say we're going to talk about sport and we're going to talk about women. We think physical activity, getting fit, keeping fit, staying fit. But actually, there's a bigger piece that I'm more interested in around sport, and that's really about mental health and well-being, social inclusion, belonging, and finding place and community in different places for women, and particularly in a space that has potentially been quite exclusionary for women. So Women's Health Week gives us a great opportunity to talk to sport from all angles. What does that look like in the lives of women? Is it just about movement, or is it about how we relate to each other, how we fit in community, which is what I'm really excited to talk about today.
Awesome. And so that's where you come in, Kate, because you're a sports expert.
Yeah, expert, loose term. Yeah, I guess I do have a bit of lived experience in the sports scene and have seen, you know, sort of the growth of women's sport across all levels. Also have seen the inequalities and agree with Megan. I think more than just physical activity, sport is so important to our mental health and our well-being and, yeah, that social inclusion. It's something that I've had the privilege of, you know, I've made so many friends through sport, but it's also just made me the person I am. So it plays such a big role.
Kate, how did you get started in sport? Was that something you came to early in life, later in life? What's it looked like through your life?
So I started playing sport from a very young age, from about 6 years old. My mum and dad were heavily into sport, both playing and I guess volunteering. And so that was sort of the catalyst to get all us kids into sport. It's something that I guess came naturally to us to play sport. So yeah, from as early as I can remember, I've been playing sport, and that started from basketball, AFL, cricket, all the sports when I was younger. And then gradually moving just to basketball, because as you can imagine with those other sports, there was no pathway for women. So that's how I got into sport, and I've just loved it. I've never not played sport. I've never not loved it. And yeah, as I said, made so many friends and had so many great experiences throughout my life because of sport. So I couldn't imagine my life without it.
I've got two questions off the back of that. So the first one is around, how do you think your parents volunteering in that sports space, how do you think that influenced and impacted your lives growing up?
Yeah, I guess it was a good area or a good space to be growing up in because you're around people who love sport as well. They're doing it not just because of, like we've spoken about, not the physical side, but because of the social side. So you're around like-minded people who are playing sport to make friends. They're usually quite positive minded people. So yeah, I guess but there's also the competitive side. Mum and dad are very competitive people, and we're very competitive people. But yeah, I think for the most part, looking back on it now, it was more about them wanting to put us in that space because it can mould the person you are, and that's on the field and off the field. So yeah, looking back now, I can definitely see that they led us on that path for a reason, and it was a good reason.
So how do you think your parents being involved in volunteering, how did that go as far as feeling like you had that sense of belonging? Did that impact that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess them being a part of the club definitely made us feel welcome and inclusive at the club. So yeah, one, it made us feel comfortable in a social setting, but also for physical activity as well. It also, you know, instilled in us to follow in their footsteps and volunteer and be part of clubs and things like that as well. So yeah.
I think, Megan, that's something that we spoke about off air as well, that while physical activity is, you know, it's really good for you, and obviously we all hopefully know the health benefits of physical activity by now, really it's more than just that. It does give that sense of belonging and that sense of community, and especially in smaller country towns as well, or perhaps people who are trying to redefine their role after a change in identity, whether that's having children or just, you know, working out who they are. It's more than just the physical benefits. Do you agree?
Definitely. And I think it's really interesting, Kate, you used the words mold the person you are on the field and off the field. And I was not a very good sports person, but very much enjoyed being part of a team and being involved. And I think that really resonated with me, that it is more than keeping fit. It was about being with my friends, hanging out, learning to be part of something bigger and contributing to something that is a club and that has an identity and it's part of its own, kind of has something that goes beyond just what's happening on the field. Do you think that's really contributed to shaping who you are now?
Oh, 100%. And I think it's become real clear in the sort of the last few months. I've had quite a few things happen in my sporting life, which have been, it's been quite a tumultuous year for me, which we might get into later, I don't know. But the things that have happened in the past few months have really made me realise how much it wasn't just about playing sport. It was about those relationships that I've formed. It was about, you know, being able to go to training 2 or 3 times a week, seeing my friends, but also having the physical benefits as well. But definitely the social, the mental health side, it really hit home to me the last few months, everything that's happened, and how important sport, how important a role sport plays in that. I compare it to, I'm still playing sport at the minute, but I've gone to a different club and they're amazing, very welcoming club, love them to bits. The girls are amazing, but it's really been hard to form those connections again. And at the end of the day, like, I've made friends, but I just miss my friends. I miss having that safety net of what I had become so used to over the past 3-4 years. To have it taken away, it had such a profound mental impact on me that's made me really appreciate how big a role sport plays.
The other thing that you mentioned earlier that I just want to touch back on is that you went into basketball because the other sports didn't have a pathway for women.
Yeah, I've always reflected. I've loved, basketball has been amazing and I don't regret anything. It's let me travel the country, let me travel internationally. Again, made lifelong friends, had the best experiences. It's always in the back of my mind, but when I was younger, I was really good at cricket and I was really good at AFL. So I definitely always wonder, you know, could I have gone further with those? The pathways weren't there. That's what you have to live with now. But it's also really great. It makes me really proud to see the pathways are there now for a lot of younger girls. So yeah, it's two ways.
And how do you think that shaped you that you didn't get your sports of choice?
I don't think it's because it just wasn't a thing. It's not something that I realised at the time. But looking back now, like I said, I'm like, oh, what if I get super jealous? Like, I'm proud. I get super jealous of the pathways the girls do have now. But yeah, so at the time, I guess I just went with what was available to me and I loved it. I did it. But I definitely, yeah, on reflection, wonder what could have been.
And thinking back, Kate, to kind of when you had that, your options narrowed to basketball, did you see other, whether it was your teammates or friends, because of that limiting of options, did they choose to like drop out of sport or change the way they engaged with sport?
Yeah, I can't think of a specific example, but you can see that it definitely would have happened. I think because, you know, if you compare AFL to basketball, you have a squad of, 30 odd players. With basketball, you've only got a squad of 10, 12 players. So it was very limited in the fact that if you didn't make a team, oh, what else can you do? So I definitely feel that women, girls would have dropped off playing sport because it was just too hard. There wasn't enough pathways, wasn't enough options for them. So yeah, 100% think that would have happened.
I'm going to be honest. I am like the least traditional sporty person going. Like I'm really terrible and it's really quite embarrassing my limited knowledge here. But could you play those games? Like could you play the sports that you loved up until a certain age? Cricket and football?
Yeah, no. So when I say I liked cricket, we had Kanga cricket when we were younger. So that was real basic learning to play cricket. And then it sort of filtered off into the what the boys could play and play normal cricket.
Yeah.
There was nothing for girls. So that stopped. Same for AFL. They never had anything when I was younger. So when I say I was good at AFL, it was just kicking on the oval at school or kicking in the backyard with my brother. Yeah, so.
That must have, like, because you had a brother, been even harder because he can go and do whatever he wants and you've got swimming, gymnastics or basketball. Netball, I suppose.
Netball. Hockey, maybe.
I did try netball and hockey. I've done all the sports. I've tried them all.
Kate dipping her toes in everywhere, yeah. Trying to find the right fit.
Yeah, it was hard. I think it was, like I said, I got jealous sometimes. But like I said, with basketball, no regrets. I loved it. I love basketball. So I guess I had that to fall back on. A lot of people probably didn't have that to fall back on. So I guess for those people, it's pretty sad.
How's it changed?
Well, it's changed huge. I guess from a local level, I've been able to see young girls playing football. So they have juniors now in the clubs that we have down here in Bunbury and across the state, obviously. So there's that pathway with AFLW. Obviously, with the AFLW league, really put a spotlight and given a bit more incentive, I guess, for girls to follow that pathway. So on that side, that's changed. And obviously the same with cricket, you know, there's a pathway now for girls to go up that way. So yeah, there's huge changes, which are quite obvious, but none that I've really been a part of because I'm too old now.
But can you see it, Kate, kind of being involved in sport and sporting clubs still? Do you have interaction with the juniors and kind of the girls going through those pathways? And can you see a difference kind of from the outside?
Yeah, I can see a difference. I mean, there's still a lot of challenges. At our local football club, we tried really hard to be involved in our juniors and get down to games. We had what they called a mascot at one of our grand final games. It was a young girl that played football, but she was playing with the boys because they didn't have the numbers. So yeah. She was one girl among the team of boys, but she killed it. She was so good. So we got involved with her and she loved it. She loved that she had that she could play, but she was also knew that she was limited in the fact that maybe there wasn't going to be enough interest from girls. And so having that insight, I guess, being down the clubs, seeing her play, it really made you want to try and help out and see what you could do to help that pathway grow even more.
And that's, I mean, Bunbury's not a small country town anymore, but I imagine that's would have additional challenges when you are in some of those smaller spaces when, yeah, AFL, it's still not traditionally a girls' sport. And so it does make it challenging when you're trying to create a girls' team and you've only got one girl that wants to play.
I think you would have more girls that do want to play, and it just comes back to that, you know, a club making or a league making it welcoming and inclusive to say, hey, we've got a girls comp, we've got interest, come along, have a go. So it goes back to the club really putting in that effort, because it not only benefits the girls that want to play that sport, but it benefits the club in the long run. There's a league, a juniors team in Donnybrook, who I know have a great bunch of girls, a big, strong bunch of girls that down there playing. So I think there's, and the club's worked really hard. I know they've worked really hard to attract those girls, welcome them in, and be really inclusive. And then there's other clubs that probably just don't put in as much effort. So I think it really falls back on the clubs.
Do you know that club at Donnybrook, Kate, what kind of things they've done to create that environment that is welcoming to the girls?
I know that, I guess, a lot of the parents are former footy players. So they're sort of at that age where they've played, they've retired, all their kids are coming up now to that age where, and Donnybrook is a small town. So I think it just comes from the parents perhaps being involved, A, in the club, and B, wanting their kids to be involved as well, and just encouraging them to have a go at it that way. So yeah, it comes back to the club, but also the parents as well, obviously, who form the club, really.
Kind of one in the same there, yeah. Kind of those community members who are the club and then putting in the effort.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm, you know, already prefaced it this with the fact that I'm the least sporty person that you'll ever meet. But I think as far as these kind of sports go, but it feels as though it's getting more inclusive for children. But how is it for grown adults who, you know, grown women who are looking for these kinds of community sports? How are we going as far as access and inclusion for adult women to access women's AFL or women's cricket?
It has come a long way. Both AFL and cricket, I know locally, do quite well in terms of numbers. So the numbers are growing. In saying that, I think there's still a really long way to go in terms of making it an equal playing field, pardon the pun, so gender equality across the clubs. So yes, it has come a long way in terms of, you know, women's interest is growing, but there's still a long way to go in terms of having that equality.
And you mentioned that you've gone to a new club recently, and then that was, you know, you'd got your friends in the old club and having to go into that new club. What was that like for you going into that new space?
And I'm a grown adult. I'm quite a strong person, but it was really nerve-wracking. Like, it was a really intense sort of experience for me. I was nervous. It was like I'd started school like halfway through the year.
Yeah.
But left my school when I had all my friends and I had to start a new school. So that's what I sort of likened it to. So yeah, it was a real, I was really nervous. It was, I mean, and I have to reiterate that the club were amazing. The girls were really welcoming and really friendly. But yeah, it was just an experience, I guess. I don't know how to put it into words.
No, the reason that I just wanted to highlight that is because I think that you are someone who has grown up around sport for your entire life, and you still found it challenging to go to that new club. So for people who are listening who perhaps haven't gone to these kinds of what I'm going to call traditional male sports, even though we're trying to reclaim them to be, you know, regardless of gender, but who may have not grown up going to those kinds of sports, that it's completely normal to feel daunted at the thought of having to walk into that club and feel like it's, yeah, your first day at a new school and everybody knows each other, but often you will find that the people who are on the other side of that club door are actually really welcoming and really kind, and if they're not, find another club.
Yeah, 100%. And look, I'd say like 99% of the time, the women that you are going to meet at those sort of newly formed clubs, teams, they're going to be so welcoming. They're going to be friendly. They're all going to be like-minded people like you who are probably in the same boat. I think it's definitely worth, you know, jumping in and having a go that way. I guarantee most clubs and the women involved are welcoming, because we're all in the same boat, right?
That's it. And often the players who are on the team are desperate for additional players. So like, oh, it's another one.
For sure.
And I was going to say, Kate, and that, like you said, Emma, particularly for people who haven't maybe been involved in sporting clubs for a long time, or that's never been something they've been into. Do you think, Kate, anyone of any skill level, can you approach a club and have a chat about what it might be like to get involved?
Yeah, and like you said, you might not even be very good at sport, but there's so many ways that you can be part of a sporting club. You don't have to be on the field, you know. And seriously, at this local level, it's more about the social side anyway. You love playing sport. Like, I'm competitive, so I love going out there and winning. But then I love just being at the club afterwards. You know, that's really what it's all about. You're not going to... It's at a point where we're not, you know, bursting at the seams with players. So you're going to go to a club and join. You're going to get a run. You can train, or you can sit on the sidelines and encourage us, or run water, or volunteer in some other way. But yeah, just being involved in the club, like we say, it's more about the social and mental health and well-being. So it's definitely worth it, no matter your skill level.
I think something that I'm trying to tell myself as I've hit 40 and going through multiple midlife crisis at the moment is, in the past I've kind of gone with the motto of, if at first you don't succeed, give up and try something else. And what I'm coming to realize is that you actually don't need to be good at something in order to have fun doing it. And if at first you don't succeed, maybe give it another whirl. Apart from, I'm never doing a spin class ever again, but that's, you know, that, honestly, whose idea was that? But other than that, you know, so yes, you might not be good at football because you've never played before, but the way that we get better is to actually give it a good crack.
Yeah, 100%. And no one's going to, well, from my experience at a local level, no one's going to judge you for just giving it a crack. If you just go out there and try. And like I've said, 99% of the time, we're all going to be welcoming. All the girls are in the same boat. You're going to be welcomed. You're going to be, you know, encouraged to have a go.
So I'm wondering, Kate, you've played at a number of different levels. How did you find the inclusion, or how did you find the camaraderie at those different levels?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So when I look back at basketball, I lived in Perth for a while and played basketball up there. It was a lot different to the local level when I come back to Bunbury and started playing AFLW down here. I guess Perth and the higher level leagues, it's a lot more advanced in terms of there really is the So I played basketball in the Women's National Basketball League. So the equivalent of the NBL was like the Perth Wildcats in the NBL. So you can see the difference between the women's and the men's club at that level. But they were inclusive club, you know, they want the same, outcomes as you, but obviously there's a lot of factors, including money, sponsorship, things like that. But it was really interesting at a local level, they were sort of even more behind. I think like they were welcoming, and you know, they say, oh, we want women to be a part of the club, part of the league, but it's very much a lot of talk when really it takes action.
I guess it sounds like, you know, we talk about equity and inclusion all the time, but talk's cheap. What are you actually doing to try and make this a space where women are not only welcome but celebrated? You know, to have clubs where we want to have a women's team here. We want to have a space for women. We want to have a club which has a change room for women, or a toilet for women.
Or toilet paper for women, yeah.
Yeah.
It might be helpful to encourage people to play if you've got some toilet paper involved.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and that's it. Like, so with the team that we had down here, we all came together at a point. So the club had a women's team in for a few years, and then at a certain point there was a group of us that came together. And like, there was no, like, you know, we're not like the men's league. They don't, you know, buy in players, spend some money to attract this player. It was just that this group of girls had come together at this point in time, and we were amazing. Like, we were really good. So we won 3 premierships in a row. And
that's the club, amazing, Kate.
Yeah. Let's just take a minute to let that sink in. That's awesome.
That's a three-peat. Yeah. Like, that's amazing.
So we essentially, you know, like, it was, I think, 3 years before that, or two or three years, they'd had a team before that that wasn't very successful. They had developed a few juniors, obviously, to come through, and then a few players came to the club to make this team that was just really good. We had a coach come in, Max Jeddah. He was incredible for the club. So it was just this sequence of events that brought us all together, and we won the three premierships. And, you know, the club, you know, they were obviously really happy with us. They, you know, they get around us, but there was nothing in those 3 years, those three premierships. They haven't hung anything up at the club rooms. So there's none of our flags are hung up. There's no photos of us up on the walls, you know, like a premiership photo.
Oh, wow.
Nothing. And you can't tell me that if a men's league team had won one premiership, they wouldn't have done something. So they basically, you know, they like you say, talk is cheap. They talk to us and say, you guys are amazing. Like, you're bringing in all these sponsorship dollars for us because you've done so well. You've really put our women's program on the map. But they're nothing. So we brought in all these sponsorship dollars. But this year they spent all that money, so it seems, on a men's team to win the premiership. It's bonkers. Like, they sort of went backwards in the fact that in the change rooms, where we don't have a women's change rooms, you've got a men's change rooms we share with the men's, the little area where we sort of got ready before games, they built into a meeting room for like the team meeting before games. So again, we could use that if we wanted to, but where were we going to get changed? Like, it was just, yeah, really odd that they would, you know, that we did so well, and they talk all this talk about the work, what we've done for the club, but then there was just no reward for it, you know. And we don't want anything special. We just want the same as what the men would have got.
But I mean, you say talk is cheap, but you know what else is cheap? A hook for the wall to stick a photo up. Like, even if you get a handyman to do that, $50 max. So that's insane.
It is. And it was, you know, and we felt like if when we like said, like, it's such a, it's like you say, it's a tiny thing to do. When we felt like we complained about it, we felt like we sounded like we were complaining about something so minor. But if it's so minor, just do it. And like I said, you just can't tell me that if a men's program had done what we had done over that amount of time, that they would have got that same treatment or lack of treatment that we had of. It just wouldn't have happened.
It just doesn't make sense that, I mean, sports clubs are all about celebrating the wins. And yet you had, these aren't, you know, it's not you won three games, you won three premierships, and nothing was done to sell. You, like you say, you're not asking for a ticker tape parade. It would have been nice, but particularly after the third. But to be able to, yeah, stick up a flag and put your photo on the wall.
Yeah, and it's bigger than just, you know, winning those premierships. It's what we did for that club in terms of, you know, we built up their women's program. I'd like to think we were role models for the juniors that were taking part, and hopefully doing our bit to encourage more girls to take part. So I think the impact that we had was more than sponsorship dollars. It was yeah, a lot more. And I just, yeah, it's just crazy to me. And I think that's why it's had such a profound impact, because I just can't believe that it's still, this happened to us in 2022.
For me though, it's bigger than that, because, you know, so you had this profound impact on the juniors that were coming up, and I don't doubt that you did, but they didn't take advantage of that. You know the saying, if you can see her, you can be her. Mm-hmm. They didn't put the photos on the wall. They didn't show that for those girls that are coming in, whether they're coming in because, you know, dad's playing or whatever that is, those girls coming in didn't see that this is a space where girls, this is a space for girls, this is a space for women, this is a space where you get to come and you get to be equal. This is kind
of...
And celebrated, that's it. And instead, you're maybe allowed to get changed in a meeting room, and there literally is not a space for you.
Yeah, and you know, and you talk about, yeah, it being inclusivity, and that's how you sort of stay in sport and want to be involved in sport. But they've done the complete opposite, and look where they are now. They don't have a women's team anymore. They don't have a women's program. They're starting from scratch again. They're having to advertise for a new coach, new team manager, and when it comes around to the season, new players. And it's really concerning that they're not, I don't know what their women's program, if they're going to have one next year, will look like.
So it's loss on so many levels because of actions they chose not to take at a previous time. And that's kind of really what's standing out to me, Kate, what you're describing as well, is the impact that that's had on both yourself and your teammates and your friends and your, can you talk us through that a little bit? Because you I can hear it in your voice that this is, like you said, it's been a profound impact. What, how did that make you all feel when that was the actions being taken by the club, or lack of action?
Yeah, it was upsetting when it just didn't happen. And then we tried to bring it to attention before everything sort of blew up. We were already saying, hey, can we do this? Can we do this? And it was just falling on deaf ears. Nothing was happening. And then I guess everything sort of exploded and went crazy. And now, and the sort of sequence of events that our team went through, so many of the team have just suffered mentally from what has happened. Because like I said, we had this amazing thing, and it wasn't just about winning. It wasn't, you know, about the premierships. It was about that we were this, we had this bond, we were a family, and it was just ripped apart from things that were so avoidable. So yeah, it was just, this girl's still struggling, and including myself, like every week there's something that happens, and to think that sport could have this such a negative effect on you when you're doing it because of the social and mental health like benefits, it's just, yeah, it's crazy.
And that's a lot of players to try and find new teams if they get to a point where, because I imagine that you're burnt and you think, do you know what, I can't, I need to take a break. And that's, you know, that's devastating in itself, that something that you love, you no longer do because of somebody else's actions or inactions. But also then you've got to go and try and find other spaces and create new families and new teams and new relationships.
Yeah. And there is girls that have that were playing in our team that have just given up because they were so, the experience for them was so negative that they just don't want to play footy anymore. So they've walked away, and maybe even from sport altogether, they've walked away because of what's happened. And it's not just that they're walking away from sport, you know, they're walking away from the club, they're walking away from possibly being volunteering at other sporting clubs, all because of such a negative experience.
And Megan, you were saying, you know, this has had such a profound impact on Kate and her teammates, but I imagine also a really profound impact on future players as well. And the fact that now that club doesn't have a women's team, and, you know, starting from scratch, what's going to happen? Is it likely to get another women's team? I suppose we don't know any of those things.
Definitely. And back to like you were saying before, Kate, when it's the one junior girl in the team, like recreating that same environment again, when we know better and can do better. And it wasn't for lack of trying for yourselves, but to be hit with that resistance time and time again for asking for what's equal, the flow on effect, like you said, Emma, to all of the next generation as well is really significant.
So what was, now my understanding is that this then, you know, your players all walked out and then this went up to higher levels and had to be investigated. What was the outcome of that?
Still waiting. So it's, yeah, well, we thought we would have heard by now. So basically the WA Football Commission stepped in to do an investigation. This investigation took quite a while. It was also a very harsh experience for us girls that had to sit through hearings. Luckily we got to sit through it together. But basically, you know, there was one we had like a three and a half hour hearing, I think, where we were just questioned. And the league, they were quite good, quite understanding through that process and really feel comfortable. But it was also just such an exhausting experience as well. And we were basically told out of that there would be a report handed down with recommendations. So that's why we were so willing to do it. We thought, okay, great, there's going to be recommendations that is going to change the way, you know, women are represented in this league. And those recommendations would make some real changes, but we're still waiting to see what those recommendations are. They've come out with a couple, which is really weird. If you're going to come out and reveal two or three of them, why not reveal all of them? So we're still waiting to see what those recommendations are, but we're optimistic they're going to be good, strong recommendations. But the longer that we're not, you know, being given those, it makes me worry.
That's it. That optimism starts to wane, doesn't it?
If these are strong, positive recommendations, why are you just not bringing them out? I don't.
If you could give recommendations, Kate, what would your recommendations be?
Yeah, it's hard. I think there needs to be some sort of governance around women participation and equality in sport. We've spoken, Megan, briefly about some work that's been done over in Victoria in terms of, you know, real actions, like if you don't have the infrastructure for women to be playing sport, you don't get the support or, you know, funding or whatever. So I think it needs to be hard actions from a real high level to A, get the infrastructure in for women to be involved and not just be involved, but be included, have that a safe, welcoming space to play sport, i.e. get changed, have a shower, all those things that the boys get to do. But then two, I think, from a behavioural side, some education around women in sport, educating people, men, why women in sport is important and why they should be treated the exact same as men in sport.
So it sounds like that kind of two-pronged approach, in a sense, kind of the community ground up work and then kind of a legislative piece kind of top down or some governance around that. And thanks for kind of highlighting, Kate, we have had that chat about what's recently been announced in Victoria, which is linked to their fair access policy roadmap under the Change Our Game initiative. So what you've kind of mentioned there is actually they've introduced in Victoria from July 2024, all Victorian councils will need to ensure equitable access to sporting facilities for people of all genders, for them to be able to be considered eligible to receive infrastructure funding from the Victorian government. So that consequence you're talking about, that there's actually a deadline that you have to have this in place with change rooms, with showers, with facilities, to be able then to continue to improve and engage and get government money going forward.
Yeah, and I think it's timely that you mentioned that, because I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's a huge project that's getting underway down here at Hands Oval, where South Bunbury, the home of South Bunbury Football Club. So they've got state, federal and local government funding to, and sorry, it's not South Bunbury, it's the Hands Oval infrastructure. So the South West Football League is also based at Hands Oval. So this funding is to redevelop Hands Oval, the infrastructure around Hands Oval. So yeah, it's quite timely that they're getting all this funding, the South West Football League is getting all this funding. But perhaps if there was some sort of governance similar to what's happening in Victoria, if that would play out differently, I don't know. I mean, the work that they are doing there is to make it more inclusive for women. But in saying that, the South Bunbury Football Club's infrastructure has to be done by them as well, whether they get funding, help, assistance with that as well. But it would be good to see, yes, something like that come in before all that work starts. I mean, it's very timely.
I know that this is like a massive question, and I'm really hoping that you can come up with the answer, because I think people above us have probably debated this. But when we're talking about, I think you mentioned, Kate, something like seeing men and women's sport as equal. So there's been a couple of different sporting codes that have come out and said, well, we're going to pay men and women the same wages. And the argument to that is, but it's men's basketball or men's football, men's cricket that's bringing in the advertising dollars. So from that perspective, it's around society and community. How do we make women's sports appealing to the masses to consume?
That is a big question.
Yeah, I know. I really should have warned you. It just popped into my head. Sorry.
Yeah. No, but it is a good question. I guess it's a lot. It's the question that a lot of people have been asked. If you look at the AFLW as an example, it is growing, and you can understand why it has taken a while. When you look at, you know, AFL men's, they've been playing for decades. So yeah, it's gonna take time, which we're fine about, right? We know it's gonna take time.
Yeah, we can give them at least 12 months.
And AFLW has grown. But yeah, I think it comes down to acceptance. It comes down to, you know, it comes down to commitment from the overarching body that's governing that sport to market them better, to, you know, market them exactly the same as you do the men. Yeah, put in the time, put in the dollars, whatever. But yeah, it is a tough question.
It does feel a bit chicken and egg, doesn't it? So, you know, we can't consume those sports because they're not readily available, but they're not readily available because the masses aren't consuming them. So at what point do you have to go, well, someone needs to bite a bullet somewhere, and we need to make these more accessible so that we can actually see where everything lies at the end of that?
Yeah, and it's finding the right model. You know, for years, women's sport has been a curtain raiser to men's sport. I think it's no longer is that, you know, where women's sport is as entertaining as men's sport. You just need to spend some time and check it out. Look at the Big Bash for the women's now. It's the same entertainment value as the men's. It's exactly the same. It's just, you know, buying into that. And yeah, I think realizing that, yeah, women's sport isn't a curtain raiser. It's its own entertainment in its own right.
I think you've nailed that, Kate. And like you said, we know time is a big factor in this. You said men's comps, where we're now seeing women's comps develop at the professional level, whether that's AFLW or we see a different approach to a women's comps in the NRL. I will declare my East Coast bias here, being from the East Coast, keep track of the NRL as well. They have taken different approaches to establishing their competitions. But what they need to recognise is that investment over time, that actually in those men's comps, like you said, that transition from in the AFL, from VFL, even in a semi-professional space to the AFL, took time and took investment in training and coaches and players' salaries. That means they can do it as a full-time job and focus on their sport, rather than we know in the AFLW for most of the seasons previous to this one, everyone's working a full-time or part-time job on the side, taking annual leave to fly for their matches across the other side of the country. Well, how do we expect that to produce the same results as a full-time wage of 200K a year for a men's player?
That's exactly it. And, you know, when I started playing WNBL basketball, I got paid $50 a season. I remember that first time they're like, oh, we're gonna get payments for the girls. $50. And the men's equivalent, they're full-time athletes.
Yeah.
So of course, like you say, they're gonna be producing better games, better athletes, attracting better athletes. And I've got friends who are playing AFLW, and they have full-time jobs, and then they're having to train after work, take annual leave to do what they have to do. But yeah, so like, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. The money you put into it is going to obviously affect the quality, but you also only have to look at the AFLW and how many times this season already, it's one round in, people are like, oh, look how far they've come. Like, they've really improved. It's like, yeah, of course they have, you know,
obviously.
When the men started, that they were just amazing straight off the bat. No, like it took, they've played, like we said, decades and decades. So give us a little bit of time and see how far they've come now. Imagine how far they're going to come in another couple of years.
I think kind of back where we started, also that we haven't had the pathways to professional AFLWs, I think such a classic example for this. we've got a lot of cross code players. Sorry, Emma, this is probably way too in depth for the detail that you're after.
That's okay. It's all good.
Sport
person. Yeah. Don't even have my phone, so I can't quickly Google what it is you're talking about.
But without the pathways, it means young girls like yourself who may have had an affinity to footy when you were growing up didn't have the option to continue down that path. So didn't have the years of skill development, went into another code, very successful. You've played at a national level there, to then cut back across as an adult and go into a professional competition. There's actually like a decade of years lost in your skills that boys in the same predicament don't face. They're going straight through with that one code. And so, like you said, that increasing of quality and of skills will only go up over time.
Yeah, that's definitely it. And you can see that now with, because the pathway has grown over the last few years, especially that the juniors coming up, or the draftees coming up into the AFLW level, they're so much more advanced than, you know, the marquee players that were playing that first year. And yeah, I can even see it relating back to myself playing locally from when I first went out and had a kick for that first training session. I was like, oh, I'm going to give AFLW a go because I can. My skills developed over those 3 years alone as a mature adult. So you can only imagine what that pathway for young girls is going to do.
I think though we're still experiencing some of those issues. So, you know, a colleague at work, her daughter, I'm just trying to think how old she would be, 9, and now she's the only girl who wanted to play in that particular football club. And so they've had to then go and request that her daughter be able to play with the boys because the girls' team didn't get off the ground. And so even the fact that she's had to request permission for her to be able to play, but then her mum is my colleague, is now having to go through but how do I feel about the fact that my 9-year-old is playing with the boys and all of those things? But the only other option is she doesn't play. And exactly what you're talking about that happened, you know, a decade ago is still happening now. So what do we need to do for that?
Yeah, I think some real questions need to be asked of the clubs, like what are you doing to encourage? Because I can guarantee there are girls out there that want to play. They just don't have the confidence, or they perhaps haven't been encouraged enough to give it a go. So I think some work has to be done because the value is there in terms of, you know, playing, being involved in sport, getting girls participated in sport, a different sport, a sport where you can start out now with no skill and go through the pathways to develop that skill. So yeah, I think it starts at a grassroots level and really, you know, putting some accountability on clubs about what they are doing to get girls participating.
I think that's a really good point, Kate, and also Emma, to that, it's not as if we've just that all of those other barriers to girls and young women's participation in sport are now gone because we've got some professional codes and we see them on telly for, you know, my pet peeve, a very short season at the end of the men's season between finals and all of that. But it's all, we know young women and girls drop out of team sports when they hit about 12, 13, and there's a whole heap more tied up in that around kind of body image, participation. What does it mean to be involved in a club and a team? And so that idea, Kate, that it's the clubs having to actively engage young women and girls, and also some big campaign messaging around this is your place. You have space to take up in sport and in sports clubs. Do you think something like that would be beneficial?
Yeah, for sure. I think because the benefits are for the club as well. You know, it's not just the girls, it's for the club. You want girls involved, you want women participating throughout all levels, whether that's through sport or through volunteering, and for the social benefits, you want women involved. And yep, and I think 100% the responsibility lies with those clubs. And that probably starts from good leadership, having women on the board of clubs as well, and just doing everything you can to make it an equal space for all genders.
And I think I was just thinking about it going, often when we hear about the volunteers in those sports clubs, we're talking about the mums who are working in the tuck shop, but having women represented at all levels of the volunteering as well. So yeah, you're right, sitting on the board, but making sure that when they are sitting on the board, they're using language that talks about our players, not our boys. And, you know, just something as small as that makes such a difference, and finding ways for women to be represented across the entire club, not just, oh, well, mum's on tuck shop duty this week.
That's 100% it. And that's one of the recommendations they did reveal out of the report, is that they need to have women representation on not just, I think, the local level, like the club level, but the South West Football League level. But it just blows my mind that that needs to be a recommendation. Like, you should be encouraging women to be on your board, be involved in the club at all levels. And you're right, yeah, not just the canteen, but to get them involved at that board level, really just make sure that the voices are being heard from both sides. And yeah, I think that's something that's definitely probably been quite obvious this year for everything that's happened down here, is there wasn't great representation on the board for our football club. And I just wonder, yeah, what kind of difference that would have had.
And I think Kate and Emma, you raise a really good point about that representation and gender equality at all levels of decision making and in the club process, and the effort we need to ensure goes into creating those inclusive environments at all of those levels as well. That just having a woman on the board isn't in and of itself necessarily enough to mean that she is valued and listened to and feels safe and comfortable in that space.
Yeah, and I've seen that firsthand. I actually joined up to be part of our board as a sort of a women's representative last year, but it was a lot. Like, it wasn't a welcoming environment. I didn't feel like my voice was being heard. I felt like I was there to tick the box.
Yeah.
And it was quite an intimidating experience. So yeah, a lot of work for sure has to be done in that space.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time diversity, equity and inclusion becomes a ticker box. And, well, we can say that we've got, you know, the fact that you're there as a women's rep, not there as a board member. That, and look, I get it. We need to have women's representatives in spaces, but they should be there as a board member who can, yeah. How many men's reps were on the board?
Just me. At that point, I think there was another woman as well. So there's two of us and about, you know, six or seven men. And,
yeah,
know,
but you were there specifically as a women's rep. Did they have a man there as a men's players rep?
Oh, no.
No, of course not, because the entire board is the men's players rep. So, yeah, so we need to get rid of some of the tokenism that's out there and find spaces and ways for women's voices to be heard, because we don't generally shout over the top of the hubbub. We wait our turn, and because we wait our turn, we don't get heard. All of those issues that go with that. Megan, we came in with a very rough plan of some thoughts that we were going to talk about today. Have we covered some of those things?
Definitely. I feel like I've
That's
just
always
been
a win.
Listening to Kate. It's all, yeah. I just love listening to you talk, Kate. It's great.
I haven't even delved into the good stuff.
Pardon?
Some of the stuff, I haven't even delved into the really juicy stuff that happened at our club. Like, it's just some of the stuff that we've gone through is just, you just wouldn't read about it. I mentioned toilet paper before. Like, we had to ask several times for toilet paper to be put in the girls. We did have toilets at the club rooms, but
you just couldn't use them unless you took your own toilet paper.
Yeah. And, you know, we asked for toilet paper, and then they said, you know, and then we like said, you know, we shouldn't have to ask for toilet paper. And then they complained because we're complaining about toilet paper when it's such a simple thing. It's like, well, just give us the toilet paper.
Hey, and it just sounds like, Your gratitude for having toilets, like the fact that you were like, oh, but at least we had toilets, is just speaks volumes. The idea that that's
a win.
Yeah, exactly. That's a win to have a toilet to use is just really speaks to how much work we still have to do. And that idea that you've got to I think what you speak to is an experience really common for women in a whole heap of different spaces of, well, there's an issue. We've raised it as an issue. It's not a huge thing, but it's important. And now we're being minimized and not listened to and being told that we're making a big deal out of something when there's quite a simple solution here. That's such a disappointing experience and such a common experience to have your voice silenced like that.
And the fact that you're minimizing it to a point because you are going, well, at least we had this. And well, at least, you know, yes, we could use this space as well. We didn't have anywhere to get changed, but we could use the meeting room if we wanted to. Like, I think women do that a lot. There's this issue. Actually, it is a serious issue, but it could be worse. It could also be a damn sight better.
Yeah, quite easily.
Yeah. So I'm going off script. Well, we don't have a script, but if we did, I'd definitely be going off it. What was the issue or something that happened that was the most mind-blowing for you?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So it was like, I just see it as this sort of like a train wreck of events. So the first thing that happened last year, I kind of thought, oh, are we heading in the right directions in terms of women participating in sport at this club? It was sort of, out of a COVID lockdown, we sort of started coming back to play footy, and we didn't have any water runners for a game. And I turned around to the game day manager and I was like, oh, like, why didn't we have any water bottles? And he's like, oh, we put it in the players group that you had to bring your own water bottle, but you guys aren't part of that players group. It's a Facebook group. You guys aren't part of that players group, are you? And I was like, well, no.
But why not?
He's like, well, I guess I was going to add you, but I'm a bit worried about some of the things that get said in that group. I was like, A, how's it a players group if we're not in it? And B, what is being said in that group?
And rather than moderate that, you mm-hmm. thought the best thing to do was exclude the female players who obviously would find that content inappropriate.
Right?
And even the recognition that it was inappropriate yeah. and offensive.
But we're not going to do anything about it.
About that. I'm just going to keep it away from you.
Yeah.
Far out, Kate, is about all I can say, unfortunately.
That was the start. And then, you know, a few other things happened. I guess the big mind-blowing moment was at this year's launch event. So it was our jumper presentation. They were introducing the players for each team. Obviously more of a focus on the men's and the women's.
But the fact that the women were much more successful, but we'll skip on past that. Yep.
They had also had a players auction. So essentially they'd broken up the teams. They'd done this quite well in terms of they'd broken up, you know, someone from the league, someone from the women's, someone from the reserves, someone from the Colts to be in one group. And so someone would auction, there'd be an auction to buy that group. And then, you know, the best and fairest votes would tally up at the end and you'd win whatever money. Anyway, they had men's coaching staff member get up to be the auctioneer. He got up on stage to intro himself. We had no idea who he was. He was new to the club. And one of the very first things he said was, it's good to see the girls here. I've never seen as many pretty girls as when I was last at Goldfingers, which is a strip club. And I think we were so like in shock. We were just like, did he just say that? It was just, so we kind of, and also in that moment, we're kind of like reeling from it, like, yeah, that's probably not the right thing to say. Some people found it funny, including some girls, because maybe they don't know any better.
It's awkward and inappropriate, and how do I respond? I'll giggle.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a massive moment, which upon reflection, it was sort of like, we were so in shock, we didn't do anything, we didn't say anything. And that was one of the arguments the club put to us when we eventually raised it, is why didn't you say anything on the night? It's like, well,
why didn't anybody else say something on the night either? Who was in a position of power?
Yeah. Why did it happen? why didn't anyone else pick up on it in terms of, you know, like the male leaders at the club? I mean, obvious why they didn't. And yeah, and third, why do we have to? Like, it was the point that we had to sort of, in that environment where we were already made to feel quite uncomfortable,
exactly.
We're the ones to bring it up. It was quite, yeah, I just couldn't get my head around it. And it wasn't until like during that week that followed at training, a couple of the girls were like still bringing it up, still talking about it. And we're like, you know what, we should probably say something. Mm. So yeah, when we eventually did say something, you can imagine that didn't go down well either. But yeah, that was probably the biggest, I think, moment for us to realise that we're not heading in the right direction here.
And I think as far as, you know, inclusion goes, two really simple things right there would have been, one, include you in the players' Facebook team, Facebook page or group, whatever that is. And two, if somebody makes inappropriate comments, it's on everybody to call that out. And there should just be rules for life, really, shouldn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was that fact, you know, and there was like 17, 18-year-old girls in that room as well. And to think that they, because they didn't bring it up that night, that there was no issue with it, it's just wrong.
Because what you're describing, Kate, is such a common experience for women in so many different arenas. When those kinds of offensive, inappropriate, harassing, vilifying comments are made, and you said before, Emma, that I'm not quite sure what to do here. I'm processing it. Did that just happen? Mm. Did that really happen? If I react in this moment, what's going to be the consequence for me? And like you've just described, Kate, at an event where there's clearly a power differential mm-hmm. between the men who sit in leadership positions in the club and the players, what kind of expectation is on your female players to stand up in that moment with all of those power structures around them to make themselves more vulnerable and probably cop quite a bit of continuing abuse potentially if you made a deal out of it in the moment? But then to turn around and victim blame when you didn't raise it in that moment, it's just layer upon layer, isn't it? Of how do you feel included as a woman in that club if that's what you're facing at every turn?
Yeah, and that's it. You know, it's one thing to not, that we didn't bring it up that night, but then to turn around and say, well, why are you bringing it up now? Why didn't you bring it up? It's just backwards thinking. It's just because we didn't bring it up at the time doesn't mean it wasn't wrong. You know, one of the responses was, 80% of the people we spoke to that night didn't have a problem with it. I'm like, well, who have you spoken to? Were they all men?
Yeah.
Were 80% men? And hello, 20% of people that you spoke to, and none of them were us, by the way, did have a problem with it. So
if one person had a problem with it.
Yeah. And their survey statistics might be a little skewed there. I think it's probably not representative data coming out of that 80%.
That's it. I spoke to 5 people. 4 of them said it was all right, and 1 of them said maybe not. So,
yeah, just backwards.
So, because I don't want to put any women off accessing sport, and I'm not minimizing any of the experiences that you've had at all, tell me something that is amazing about being part of a team or playing sports.
It's just, it's the friendships you make, right? It's the social. It's you play sport for the social side. You can sit there. I love winning. I'm super competitive. I don't enjoy it as much as if we're losing. But at the end of the day, if I didn't have friends there, I wouldn't do it. It's the friendships that you made, and I've made friendships over years and years. Friendships that at the time when I was playing in a certain area, best friends with them. Now I don't see them, obviously, but if I ran into them in the street, it'd be like we were never apart. You know, they're great friendships because you're surrounded by people who like the same things. So yeah, that it's the biggest takeaway throughout my whole life. And I just could not imagine not playing sport and not having these friendships that I've formed. So yeah, to anyone at any age, any skill set, just go and get involved, because you don't know what you'd be missing otherwise.
I think something I hear quite often is that when you're a grown up. You can't go up to a random lady that you meet in BWS and say, hey, do you want to be my friend? But this does give, I'm using that as our playground equivalent, but this does give that opportunity that as, because how do you make friends when you're a grown up? Well, joining sports is one way to be able to make those connections.
Yeah. And so it's, a, yeah, I mean, it's hard in the fact of going and doing it, but once you do it, it's easy. Like just go and yeah, like you said, it's probably the least awkward way to start a new conversation with someone, right? Because you go, they know why you're going there. You're going there to play sport and be social. So for sure, it's yeah.
I just want to circle back right at the end here as we're going to finish up and talking about the positives, because I think that is for all of those challenges, and like Emma said, not minimizing those experiences, but you yourself have spoken to some of the real positives you find out of sport at every level, and you have played at every level. But the mental health benefits of sport, you've talked a bit about friends and inclusion. Is there other kind of mental health benefits you feel yourself getting out there and being active and participating in sport?
Other mental health benefits?
Yeah, of sport.
So many. I think it's just, how am I trying to say this? It's, yeah, you've got your friendship side, you've got your fitness side, and it's just your general well-being, you know, being outdoors, being active. Yeah, I don't know how to word it. I've played sport for years and years, but never really appreciated the mental health side. And I guess it being taken away, as we've spoken about, it's made me really see its worth a lot more. And I can't exactly pinpoint what it is, but it's just being involved in something. It's just the feeling you get, A, when you get there, you know, when you're rocking up to play or train or whatever, you're doing something, there's people there, you're being social. So it's just, it's good for you. And then when you're doing it, sometimes, yep, it's hard, it's physical activity. Of course, it's going to be hard. But when you finish, and it's fun during, and when you finish, you just feel like you've accomplished something, you've been a part of something. It has been fun. It's been hard, but it's been fun. And then it's just being social, and I don't know how to put it into words. It's just something that I just really love.
And that's so clear, Kate. Like, and I think there's something quite beautiful actually about not being able to particularly articulate what it is about playing sport and being part of a club that just makes you feel good.
Yeah. And it's ironic because I'm in communications and I can't put it into words. I'm in communications and I love sport, but I can't tell you why.
Can't communicate why I love sport. Yeah. I think I was giving a presenting a workshop the other day, and we talk about the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. So our sympathetic nervous system is the fight, flight, freeze or fawn, which I imagine was activated quite a lot for you during everything that was going on. And our parasympathetic nervous system is how our body rests and heals, and how we rejuvenate. And so we need our parasympathetic nervous system to be firing. And one of the ways that we do that is through physical activity and through sport and through, you know, mindfulness as well. And I think that often sport can be a form of physical mindfulness. So I can't catch a ball, and if somebody throws something at me, I am going to duck out of the way. But my sport of choice, I really enjoy swinging and hanging from a trapeze. I can't think about the meeting that I had at work or the reports that I've got due or, you know, any of those things, because I need to work out how I'm going to hook my leg over that bar, how I'm going to lock my ankle on so I don't break my damn neck. And I think that same kind of thing comes with when you're running to catch a ball. You can't be thinking about the argument that you just had at home, or you can't be thinking about, you know, the 10 tons of washing that you've got to do or whatever your to-do list might look like, because you need to work out, what girl am I supposed to be watching? What, you know, where's the ball going? How do I stop it going through those big fork things in the ground? So it's those kinds of mental health benefits as well, to be able to shut out the outside world, physical activity, endorphins, fresh air, sunshine, rain, less exciting. But, you know, all of those things really they fire all the good parts of our system and have so many benefits for us.
Yeah, definitely. And I think sometimes you will have a terrible day and you think the last thing you want to do is go to footy training or whatever. But then as soon as you're there and you do just switch off from the terrible day you've had, it's just, it's the best feeling because, yeah, you just switch off, you're doing something else, you're concentrating, you're having fun all at the same time without even really realizing you're doing it. I think also it's just that, for me, just that sense of belonging. You belong somewhere and you're getting so much out of it. So, yeah, it's the sense of belonging is a big one that I didn't mention either.
And I think, Megan, you alluded to that earlier, that you're part of something bigger than yourself. So, you know, with some of the sports that people do as solo sports, well, what I put in, I get out. But when you're doing that with a team, what I put in impacts the whole team. So it's that sense of shared responsibility as well.
Definitely. And even the club itself, that sense of bigger than, because I'm there, having grown up in sport clubs a bit like yourself, Kate, that, well, I played my game at midday, so now I'm going to do the waters for the seconds that might be at 2 o'clock. And then, oh, actually, at the end of the day, there's pack up and set up the next day for juniors. There's so much to do and feel a part of.
Yeah, agree, so much. Just, yeah, and yeah, like I said, the belonging side is such a huge one, and I just don't think I've mentioned enough. But yeah, it's you're not just going there and playing your game and then you're done. You're going there because you play the game and then you do all the other things after it and in between, for sure.
Not that I've ever moved to small country towns, but I often think that sporting clubs are the heart of small country towns. They are where you go to meet people. They are where you go for that sense of belonging, for exactly that reason that you talked about, Megan, you said as well, Kate, that everybody's there, everybody's pitching in. It's where you're going to meet everybody because everyone's there to either play or help set up for juniors or someone, you know, this particular person's coaching that team, or, you know, if you want to connect with that person, then they're, you know, running the tuck shop or the uniforms or whatever that might be.
Yeah, it's the easiest way, especially in small country towns, to get involved in your community, right? It's probably the first time you go, it might be a bit hard because you're going to meet new people, it's a new environment, you don't know what to expect, but really is the easiest way to get involved with your community and feel welcoming and belonging.
And I'd just like to say that it's, as someone who's had a few injuries, so no longer plays team competitive sports, I actually get the same sense from I recently started swing dancing lessons, which is very out of the ordinary, but that same sense comes from activities in different ways as well. Like what you spoke to, Emma, trapeze or hanging from things that you do, those same kind of benefits I really have felt being part of like a lessons. It's a different kind of community, kind of learning to engage your body in a different way. So it doesn't always have to look like those traditional sports either to get the same benefits.
Yeah, no, and one of the programs that we ran at Women's Health, sadly we stopped thanks to COVID, but I ran a program called Wellness Warriors, and that was, I took a group of women out and I found the most obscure physical activity options that I could, and we trialed them all together, because I think if you haven't found a physical activity that you love, it's because you haven't found the right one yet. There is the right physical activity for everyone. Football is never going to be for me because I'd have to cut my nails. That, and I can't catch to save myself, and I run like a cart horse. So, you know, it's not for me. But there's axe throwing or kangaroo or bungee fitness or swing dancing or pole dancing. You know, there's so many different physical activity options. Sometimes that might be, you know what, when I was six, I really enjoyed playing netball. I want to go back and try that again. Or sometimes it might be, oh my God, I've never even heard of that. I wonder what that is. Let's give that a shot.
Yeah. And you never know what will come out of it. And you might be terrible at it, but go and have a go and see who you meet, or maybe something amazing will come from it.
Yeah. And, you know, just because you were terrible at it at six, maybe you'll be great at it at 36. Who knows?
Life experience might help you, yeah.
That's it.
We can only hope with some of the sports I've tried.
yeah, that's it. Any final thoughts before we wrap up, Kate?
No, I don't think so. think I've waffled on enough.
I've really enjoyed the conversation. Megan, any final thoughts?
Just a big thank you to Kate for, and I'm sure you'll do this, Emma, but it's so great to have someone share their experience like this. This is my first time doing a podcast like this, and just to listen to your experience, Kate, it's been so insightful. For some of those really challenging difficulties and negative experiences you've had at the club, but to really still be able to hold on to the benefits of sport and what you love about playing, and that you found that at a new club, as daunting that first walking through the door might be, that you found a new place to kind of grow those relationships, I think is such a lovely thing to be able to share with us. And I've really appreciated your insight into your relationship with sport.
Thank you. And I should say, it was daunting. The first time I went down for footy training, it was daunting for me as well as a sports person. But yeah, and I still think back sometimes when I'm like, oh, I almost didn't go because I was like, oh, like really nervous, new friends. So looking back now, I'm like, wow, like imagine if I didn't go, where would my life have gone? I don't know, like these experiences I've had. But yeah, no, thank you for allowing me the platform. I think if these things had happened to me when I was younger, I perhaps would have stepped away from sport, but being a bit more mature, it's really, I've wanted to use my voice more to try and say, hey, this isn't okay. What can we do to make change? So I really appreciate you giving me that platform to help try and get that voice out there, make some change.
And as I just want to echo everything that Megan has said, just one, I really got to stop asking questions, but what can you think of any strategies for people who maybe go, oh, I'd really like to try this, and then drive and they're sitting in the car park and think, I'm not sure I can actually go in. Can you think of any strategies that might help them get out of the car and walk through those doors?
Just push through that threshold, man. Just do it. Be brave. Because like I said, you just don't know where it's going to take you. And what's the worst that can happen, honestly? You go there, you hate it, it's not for you, you realize that. That's another good thing. That, okay, I've tried that, I'm not going to be thinking what if later. Or best case scenario, you make the best friends you've ever met, you win 3 premierships, and some of the best life experiences. So yeah, just give it a go.
Megan, how about you? Can you think of any strategies to help people get through the door?
Yeah, I think something I found useful is roping in someone else to come with you.
Yeah.
So the first time, maybe rope in another friend so you've got a bit of a buddy to walk through. It's always nice when you have a one face that you can kind of like lean on if you need to. Or even start at a club where you might have, look, it might be a loose connection, but a friend of a friend, someone's cousin's cat's auntie,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, I do know them. I remember them from that one thing. That's sometimes enough to get you through the door.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And or even, you know, messaging someone who's going to be on the team and just saying, I'm feeling really anxious. Can we have a chat before so that I feel like I've got a connection with you and I've got someone to talk to? Or do you have a buddy system that you can set me up with somebody so that I know someone walking through that door? And it's a bit less daunting if you're doing it together.
And social media makes it so much easier to reach out to people in that way now as well. So use that platform as well to reach out and be like, hey, even like club Facebook pages, hey, can you be coming down? Can you put me in touch with someone at the club who I might be able to catch up with?
Yeah,
for sure.
Awesome. So yeah, I just want to echo again what Megan said, Kate. Really appreciate you sharing your experiences. And we hadn't known whether or not you were going to talk about some of the negative experiences. And I think it's really useful to have heard those, because it's 2022 and I'm actually really shocked that what you have experienced is still going on. And I think it can be useful for people to know, look, this can happen. But also to hear from you, here are some things that would have just really, really simple, small things that would have made a huge difference. So, you know, if you're connected to a club in some way, here's some things that you can do that actually go above ticking a box to actually making it part of the club's culture to have women represented on the field and in clubhouses as well. So really useful. And great that after all of that, you're still super excited about sport.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, like I said, I think most people who hear our story and our experiences are shocked by it, including, you know, the men higher up that have heard about it. But hopefully now that leads to, you know, the shock is passed and now some tangible actions so we can actually make some change and encourage more girls and women to participate in sport. I just hope that is my end goal and I really, really hope that happens. So thank you for giving me a chance to try and help in a platform.
No, thank you for sharing. And Megan, thanks so much for joining and being part of co-hosting today.
Thank you, Emma. Appreciated the first crack.
So we'll wrap up the episode right here. Don't forget that in order for Kate's messages to make a difference, people need to hear it. So please like and share the episode. If you've got a friend who might be interested in playing sports but may feel uncomfortable, share it with them. If you've got a friend who may be part of a sporting club and you think they could use hearing some of this, please make sure you share that and help us get the word out and help make some actual change. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of A Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. For more information on the services we offer, head to whws.org.au or Women's Health and Wellbeing Services on YouTube and social media. Looking forward to the next episode where we uncover the hidden world of women.